Well, we're running a little behind schedule, so I'm going to try to breeze through these pretty fast, especially since President Dudley gave a pretty good synopsis of what's going on in New York City specifically. I'm just going to try to put some pictures to the story. So now as Jason Abel pointed out, cities, metro areas sort of fall into these quadrants, and New York City clearly falls into the quadrant of overperformer. That is, it prices rose more during the boom and fell less during the bust than in most other areas. So what I'm going to talk about is, with that as the sort of core idea, how is New York City's housing market unique? I won't read those. I'm going to talk about recent developments on the supply side, the demand side, in terms of prices and so forth, and just look at sort of an outlook and what risks and what factors might affect the housing market going forward. Okay, so as President Dudley noted, New York City's housing market is really unique. Nationally, looking at 100% would be all housing units in the given area. Nationally, the norm, the majority of housing units are basically single-family homes that are owner-occupied. That's the case in Staten Island, but not in the rest of New York City, obviously not in Manhattan. You can see that single-family homes, obviously, although they're in the outer boroughs, you have quite a bit of it. They're definitely not the norm. Co-ops account for part of the multifamily sector. Condos, unlike the nation, are a smaller share than co-ops, which is relevant because I'll get into that in a little bit. They're less leveraged. Co-ops tend to require more down payments, so there's less leverage and speculation in there. And then rental market is really dominant in New York City, especially in Manhattan, the Bronx, and to some extent in Brooklyn. And a lot of the rental market, of course, is regulated, rent regulated. So this has lent, you can talk about the benefits of renting versus home ownership, but this has lent some stability to New York City's housing market. So turning to sort of trends in prices, I'm going to use the same measure that Jason Abel used, although this is based on a monthly instead of quarterly basis. And you can see the U.S., you have the boom and bust periods there, and then the recent period of stabilization that you've seen before. Looking at a couple of the boroughs in New York City, prices in Manhattan and the Bronx rose much more, especially in Manhattan, than nationally during the boom. They were outperformers. And then well into the housing bust, they kept rising, not peaking really until 2008, and the decline since then has been below average. So prices in Manhattan and Bronx, nationally prices have fallen by about 30% from the peak. In Manhattan and Bronx, it's more in the range of 15 to 20%. And you can see that Manhattan's actually leveled off and started to move up. Manhattan is obviously unique in many ways. It's more expensive. You also have a lot of foreign buyers that, Manhattan and New York City may seem very expensive to someone coming from most of the United States, but someone coming from Hong Kong or Europe might think differently. The other boroughs, just briefly, saw bigger run-ups than the nation and smaller declines than the nation. You can see that they've sort of stabilized, but they haven't shown any signs of picking up just yet. Staten Island, again, is very similar to the nation, but yet even there, the declines was less steep. Now, just because the prices haven't fallen as much doesn't mean there are no problems in New York City. This is basically mortgage delinquencies, 90 or more days as a percent of all mortgages. You can see here that Manhattan remains well below the national average, but the outer boroughs still have issues, and especially in places like the Bronx and Queens, you have large pockets where people are having some trouble meeting their mortgage payments. Now, turning to the rental market, rents dropped fairly sharply in 2008 and 2009. This is just Manhattan because that's the only area that we have fairly reliable data for. And you can see that this measure, which you can look at by size of apartment, you've had sizable drops in rents. And one of the things that's pretty widely known is a decline in effective rents is probably considerably steeper because a lot of new leases, landlords were offering concessions, a month, 2 months free rent, waiving fees, and so forth. So the actual rent people are paying really fell more than is suggested here. Rents have seemed to have recovered modestly in the first half of 2010, and there have been some reductions in the concessions. So the rebound's also probably been a little bit stronger than we've seen here. So this is another sign of stabilization. Now let's look at prices and rents together. This is we're using a different measure of prices. This includes both co-ops and condos. It's based on sales. It's not quite as reliable in some respects as the repeat sales index. However, this enables you to look at, I'm just picking one-bedroom apartments, but the story is pretty similar if you look at studios or two bedrooms in Manhattan. It's interesting to know that rents have roughly doubled since the mid-90s, whereas prices, even with the recent drop in prices, prices are about 3.5 times as high as they were in 1995. So the story here is really that this sort of gap that's closed somewhat, still, renting has become a much more attractive or affordable option relative to buying, and that could have implications going forward, which I'll talk about in a minute. Now, what about the supply side? So we've talked about demand and prices, but what about, you know, new construction? You can see that housing permits remained high through 2008. This is citywide, not just Manhattan. They dropped off quite sharply in 2009, and the 2010 is an estimate based on the first few months of the year. But you can see that, you know, right now at this point, there are not a whole lot of people thinking of starting new buildings. Yet there's still a lot of new construction in the pipeline. And this is a 5-year moving average of permits. That remains high. The reason we look at the 5-year moving average, which we'll focus on now, is that housing completions line up pretty closely with the number of permits you've had in the last few years. So in other words, what you're seeing coming online in a given year reflects the decisions that were made a few years ago that are sort of coming to fruition. So the building that was started in 2005, 2006, 2007 starting to come online now. And you can see that housing completions, if you just look at the last 5 years, are at a 30-year high between 2005 and 2009. So there's just been a lot of new development coming online, and there's still a large supply of units in the pipeline, as is evidenced from the permits that we've seen in recent years. So just to sum up, to look forward, actually. There are factors that support the outlook for home prices. New York City has had a milder recession than the U.S. A recovery is underway, so the economy is helping. There are relatively fewer owner-occupied homes underwater. There are a large number of co-ops, which means less leverage and less speculation. So these are kind of supportive things. On the other hand, there are factors undercutting home prices. Little or no job growth in high-paying sectors. The securities industry, as Jim pointed out. Uncertainty about the financial industry, especially compensation, given the levels of home prices here. And the large number of units in the pipeline that we just saw. And finally, prices being quite high relative to rents makes renting a more attractive option than in the past.